ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam 10th Canto, Chapter 1, Text 5. Actually, it's Text 5 through 7, the three Sanskrit verses, but let's chant the first verse.
Pitamahame sarame maranjanaya.
Pitamahame sarame
Deva Vratadya Chitra Deva Deva Vratadya Chitra Tais Tamingalai Pitamaha
My grandfather is the five Pandavas. Yudhisthira, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula, and Sahadeva.
May, Samare, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Amaram Jayai, with fighters who could gain victory over the demigods on the battlefield. Devavrata Aja, Bhishma Dev and others. Atiratai, great commanders in chief. Tamingalai, resembling great Timingila fish, which can easily eat large sharks. Jarapjayam, very difficult for us. Kauravasanya Sagaram, the ocean of the assembled soldiers of the Kauravas. Krita, considering such an ocean, Acharan, crossed it. Vatsapadam, exactly as one steps over a small footprint of a calf. Sma, in the past. Yatplava, the shelter of the boat of Krishna's lotus feet. Jauni, Translation. Taking the boat of Krishna's lotus feet, my grandfather Arjuna and others crossed the ocean of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, in which such commanders as Bhishma Dev resembled great fish that could very easily have swallowed them. By the mercy of Lord Krishna, my grandfathers crossed this ocean, which was very difficult to cross, as easily as one steps over the footprint of a calf. Because my mother surrendered unto Lord Krishna's lotus feet, the Lord, Sudarshan Chakra in hand, entered her womb and saved my body, the body of the last remaining descendant of the Kuras and Pandavas, which was almost destroyed by the fiery weapon of Ashvatthama. Lord Sri Krishna, appearing within and outside of all materially embodied living beings, by his own potency in the forms of eternal time, that is, as Paramatma and as Viraprupa, gave liberation to everyone, either as cruel death or as life. Kindly enlighten me by describing his transcendental characteristics. Purport. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 14, Verse 58. Samasvitaye parapallava plavan mahatpadam punya yasho marare pavamburiya vatsa param 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 yadipadam nateshaam. For one who has accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation, and is famous as Murari, or the enemy of the Mura demon, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a calf's footprint. His goal is param param, or Vaikuntha, the place where there are no material miseries, not the place where there is danger at every step. One who seeks shelter at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna is immediately protected by the Lord. As the Lord promises in Bhagavad Gita, Antam Sabhapandivyo Moksha Ishami Maschita. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. By taking shelter of Lord Krishna, one comes under the safest protection. Thus, when the Pandavas took shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna, all of them were on the safe side of the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Prichit Maharaj, therefore, felt obliged to think of Krishna in the last days of his life. This is the ideal result of Krishna consciousness. Antenayana Smriti. If at the time of death one can remember Krishna, one's life is successful. Prichit Maharaj, therefore, because of his many obligations to Krishna, intelligently decided to think of Krishna constantly during the last days of his life. Krishna has saved the Pandavas, Maharaj Prichit's grandfathers, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And Krishna has saved Maharaj Prichit himself when he was attacked by the Brahmastra of Ashwatthama. Krishna acted as the friend and worshipful deity of the Pandava family. Moreover, apart from Lord Krishna's personal contact with the Pandavas, Krishna is the super soul of all living entities, and he gives everyone liberation, even if one is not a pure devotee. Kamsa, for example, was not at all a devotee, yet Krishna, after killing him, gave him salvation. Krishna consciousness is beneficial to everyone, whether one is a pure devotee or a non-devotee. This is the glory of Krishna consciousness. Considering this, who will not take shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna? Krishna is described in this verse as Maya Manushya, because he descends exactly like a human being. He is not obliged to come here like karmis or ordinary living beings. Rather, he appears by his own internal energy, Sambhamamyakamaya, just to show favor to the fallen conditioned souls. Krishna is always situated in his original position as Satchidananda Vigraha. And anyone who renders service to him is also situated in his original spiritual identity, Swarupena Vyavastiti. This is the highest perfection of human life. Om Jnana Chimanandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Mulitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruvena. So we are in chapter 1 entitled The Advent of Lord Krishna, the introduction, the overture to the 10th canto. And in the verse previous to today, you heard one sloka that Srila Prabhupada was very fond of quoting. Nirvichitarsaya upadhyamana bhavasidaschotra vinogadama kautama sloka gunanuvada kumanirajeta vinapashuna. Who would not be interested or attracted to hearing about Krishna? Because simply by hearing about Krishna, you can cure the disease known as Bhavaroga. Bhavaroga means the disease of repeated birth and death. You see, by hearing properly through disciplinary succession, through the line of spiritual teachers and students, the authorized line, you will get a sense of the fact that you have a disease. What is our disease? Bhavaroga. We are moving from body to body in different species of life. This is not a normal condition. You'll meet so many people today who express some kind of sentimental knowledge about reincarnation. We specifically call that transmigration of the soul because we don't want people to confuse Krishna's incarnations with their mundane changes of the body. So they like the word reincarnation. We use transmigration of the soul moving from one body to another. So, the sentimental idea is that reincarnation, transmigration is good. You're learning. It's a learning experience which the universe provides for you. And you, in a very jolly, merry way, you move from body to body, in this way accumulating experiences, and automatically you're evolving to perfection. The universe is automatically evolving towards perfection, and you as part of the universe are also moving towards perfection. So what's the problem with birth and death? What's the problem with taking another body? It's all just part of the learning process. This is the sentiment that people have. Therefore, they profess not to be disturbed about having to take another body. This is good, it's healthy, it's just part of getting wisdom, it's part of the learning process. In this way, they very submissively take shelter of Maya. Yes, Maya, please teach us. Please grant us education. It's amazing how people will dupe themselves into having faith in the material energy, but they refuse to listen to Krishna. Of course, by submitting with awe and reverence to the material energy, indirectly they are listening to Krishna, but it's not the way Krishna wants it to happen. Krishna wants his parts and parcels to relate to him directly, without the intervening illusory medium of Maya. But anyway, people have no time to hear about Krishna, and they are afraid to take shelter of Krishna. But to dedicate themselves to supposedly learning under the influence of Maya, that is right, that is appropriate. However, by hearing from authorized Krishna-conscious spiritual teachers, you'll understand repeated birth and death is a disease. The whole process of moving from one body to another is nothing to be proud about, nothing to relish as a way of acquiring wisdom. No, it is looked upon as the worst possible disease. A symptom of enviousness and rebellion against Krishna, the complete whole. The symptom is you take a material body and you move from one body to another, trying to imitate the Godhead, trying to establish yourself as the controller and the enjoyer and everyone's best friend. Birth after birth, you do this. So, the verse that you heard yesterday is pointing out this disease known as Bhava Roga. Also, those of you who are familiar with Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll know that this same word is there in Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's Bengali verses. When it was time for Advaita Acharya to cry out for an incarnation of Godhead to appear, Advaita Acharya worshipped Tulsi Devi with Ganges water and prayers, and with a loud voice cried out for the descent of Lord Chaitanya. What were the circumstances? Everywhere people were engaged in pious activities or impious activities, but nowhere was there any trace of pure devotion to Krishna. In other words, pure devotion to Krishna is beyond good karma. Good karma, for those of you who are new here, is simply the karma is simply good material conditions. A good prison cell you get from good karma. But the fact is, you'll be kicked out of that situation. And even if you find that situation to be comfortable, how can there actually be any internal comfort separate from direct contact with Krishna? So Advaita Acharya looked around and saw everywhere people are absorbed in pious activities or impious activities. Nowhere is there a trace of bhakti, unconditional devotional service to Krishna, which is the only way that the disease of Bhava Roga will be extinguished. So this term Bhava Roga should make us serious about our spiritual endeavors. We have to get rid of a disease. Just like here at New Varshana, we have quite a few devotees who have taken to fasting. They are determined to cleanse their bodies of various pharmaceuticals given by doctors, supposedly to create peace of mind. And they're determined to cleanse their bodies of intoxication that they've indulged in over the years. And in general, they're determined just to do it to get good health. And you always hear them talking the lingo of fasting. Yeah, the toxins are coming out. You just feel it. you know, I'm really emptying out all that stuff in me. It's really coming out, all the contaminations, all the impurities. You know, every day they give you a toxin report. Yeah. Of course, we appreciate it because they're doing this in the mood to be able to increase their service. But it's also using the toxin guitar. Of course, these guys here are pretty mellow, but I've been other places where, you know, the toxin guitar gets very specific in terms of, guess what came out today? Really making advancements. And, you know, everybody trades reports about what came out, and, you know, in this way, I'm judging their levels of advancement. So, anyway, we can see that human beings have a desire to rid themselves of disease, to rid themselves of things that are impeding their natural life. But the question is, what is the real natural life and what is the real disease? So, we want to have everyone inspired to get rid of the toxins of material illusion. The first toxin, of course, and the main toxin is thinking, I am this body. And everything in relation to this body is mine or meant for my satisfaction. This is a contamination. The whole process of taking one body to another, one body after another. We want to stop that disease. Therefore, we all want to inspire one another to be very serious, to get over the disease of material existence. Not to just take it in an easygoing way. Well, it's natural to be diseased. We'll offer a little puja to Krishna. We'll mumble a few holy names, and that's all right. That makes us special. No, what makes us special is a concerted effort to root the disease out. Just like the fasters here at New Vrindavan. They are refraining from eating, knowing that if we can just undergo this austerity for a short time, our physical systems will be able to function much better. Similarly, devotees fast from sense gratification, knowing that if we just can do without these things for this short human form of life, our natural love of Krishna will be revived. If we can just, for a few decades, restrain ourselves from things that we've tried to do again and again and again, and simply were frustrated and embarrassed and humiliated, things that have weakened our bodies and made our minds feeble. If we can just hold on for a few decades, get ourselves established on the spiritual plane, the spiritual platform, how wonderful our life will be to have a natural attraction for Krishna revived again. And that's what the 10th canto is about. Stimulating your natural attraction for Krishna. The previous cantos prepared you to take Krishna's pastimes very seriously. So, just as those who are fasting have determination, we also want to have determination. To get over the disease, not to play around with the disease. Everybody knows that when you have a disease, you got to deal with it. If you see someone with a dangerous disease and they're just dallying, everybody becomes concerned. Why don't you do something about your condition? Go to a doctor. I've already been to a doctor. Go to another doctor. Do something. Don't just let it be like that. But we have to have that same sense of urgency and militancy about the real disease, Bhava Roga, repeated birth and death. So, then Prithu Maharaj says, who except the butcher, the animal killer, or the person killing himself will not want to take advantage of this Bhava Ausadhi, this medicine for the disease of birth and death? Who will refuse to take advantage? This verse should mean especially a lot to us here in New Zealand, because a huge percentage of every dollar earned comes from things related to animal slaughter. And according to the scripture, those who are absorbed in animal slaughter, they will not have an attraction for the glories of Krishna. And that should make us feel very sad in a spiritual way. We want to do something about it. We don't want to live in a country in which people are doing such horrible activities that will prevent them from being attracted to Krishna's glories. And we want people to know. You have to stop this animal slaughter. So if you're wondering why many people do not show interest in hearing about Krishna, one reason for sure is that they're absorbed in animal slaughter. Therefore, to help them, we want to make secondary propaganda. Stop this slaughter. Stop the slaughterhouses. There's no need for you to live like this. In that way, it'll help them to be able to hear about Krishna. Of course, our primary effort is to distribute direct knowledge of Krishna. But simultaneously, as we become more vigorous and enthusiastic and expert, we can also attack the conditions that prevent people from being attracted to Krishna. So we have no time to sleep, no time to sleep unnecessarily, no time to take it easy. So much work to do. We shouldn't, as I've said so many times, we shouldn't allow ourselves to be lulled into a false slumber. Oh, everything is all right, and it'll always be all right. A few problems here and there, but it's okay. No, we have so much work to do because we want these people to hear about Krishna and thereby conquer the disease. Of course, first of all, we have to take an interest in hearing about Krishna. That means, actually, I like the way Prabhupada explained it once, describing a devotee. A devotee is one who seizes the opportunity to hear about Krishna. Now, just examine. We should examine ourselves and see if that's there in our life. That behavior of seizing an opportunity to hear about Krishna. It implies militancy, very concerted action, direct action. Just like you can read in the newspapers, you know, like rebels seizing a government office, or government seizing contraband. So similarly, we want to seize opportunities to hear about Krishna. That way we know we are progressing in a healthy way to conquer the disease of repeated birth and death. And we cannot conceive of how much value you get simply by showing a little interest in hearing about Krishna. When we think we can measure that and we are aware of how much value can come, we've missed the point. The more you advance in Krishna consciousness, the more you realize, I can never calculate how much value there is just in a little hearing about Krishna. For that very purpose, Krishna has appeared and displayed his extraordinary pastimes just so we will take an interest and have subject matter for talking about and hearing about. Because living entities have the propensity to want to talk about something, hear about something. So why not talk about Krishna, hear about Krishna? That is the Lord's purpose in coming to this world. Otherwise, to kill demons, that can be done by nature. But to give devotees and give all the human beings a chance to be attracted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna appears in this world and displays his pastimes. So, now, in today's verse, Prichit Maharaj is going over history. Now, what is his purpose in presenting the past history, going back to the battle of Kurukshetra? He's arousing his own feeling of indebtedness and gratitude to Krishna. Everything is very personal. So, there is history in the Bhagavatam, but it is not the foolish history of the mundane world. The history of the Bhagavatam is all meant to evoke one's original pure love of Godhead. So, Prichit Maharaj is reminiscing how his grandfathers, the five Pandavas, crossed over the dangerous ocean of the battlefield of the Kurukshetra, which had such great commanders as Bhishmadeva. These great commanders on the other side resembled Timangila fishes. These synonyms describe that Timangila fishes are huge fish that can easily eat large sharks. Actually, Prabhupada elsewhere in talking described Timangila fishes as fish that are unknown to modern scientists, but these fish dwell in the deepest parts of the ocean and can swallow whales. That is a Tibbingilla fish. Of course, you shouldn't think that these things are so extraordinary. There are so many parts of the earth that actually people have not really been to. Modern people. You see, these scientists will give you the impression that they know exactly what goes on in every square meter of the world. That is not so. There are so, if you read, for example, Judikarman Sadaputra's book, Hidden History of the Human Race, you'll find one chapter talking about wild men. How, in various parts of the world, there have been so many reports of strange human-like creatures covered with animal fur. They look, they're human, but look like animals. And, of course, the established scientists always deny it. But there's so many of these reports, even by respectable people, of encountering these wild men in the northwest United States, in Tibet, in South America. So the point is, there's possibility for so many inconceivable things, even on the material plane, to go on in this universe. So, the commanders opposing Arjuna and the Pandavas on the battlefield resemble these huge Tibbingilla fishes. Even Bhishma Dev was the greatest military commander. That's why the Kauravas, the evil side, they were very confident. We've got Bhishma Dev. Just like, you know, in sports, when a side gets a particular star player, then they're confident. We've got so-and-so. So, similarly, the Kauravas were proud. We've got Bhishma Dev. And you can read in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita how, at first, Duryodhana was very confident, looking out over his troops. Just see who I've got on my side. Our side is so great, and the strength of the Pandavas is very limited. We've got Bhishma. And Prabhupada points out, but Bhishma had to take the other side to fight against them because of contractual agreements. Because of he owed fealty as a noble. He owed fealty to the Kaurava side. Although his heart was with the opposite side. But he was such a great warrior that even though he loved the Pandavas and knew they were right, still, to honor his word, he fought against them. And he really fought with all his might. So Duryodhana, just to make sure Bhishma wouldn't go light on his darlings who he had to oppose in battle, he was urging Bhishma onward. You can read that in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Okay, Bhishma, remember whose side you're on. So, why did Bhishma Dev take the side against the holy Pandavas, the devotees of the Lord? Actually, ultimately by Krishna's arrangement. Krishna wanted to show that even a great warrior, the greatest warrior like Bhishma, couldn't win on the side that Krishna wanted to lose. Also, the deepest reason is that Krishna wanted to enjoy fighting with Bhishma, because Bhishma had that relationship with the Lord of chivalry, love of Godhead, with the secondary mood of chivalry, fighting. And so, Krishna, to enjoy fighting with Bhishma, had Bhishma on the other side. Whatever Krishna does, he enjoys. So, just to stir up the ocean of pure love of God in fighting, Krishna fought Bhishma, and therefore Bhishma was on the other side. So, if you remember the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, you can understand that, materially speaking, the Pandavas didn't have a chance. That's the way it looked. And everybody would agree, from the ordinary point of view of military analysis. Just like before sports matches, you know, the commentators were always saying, such and such side, no way they can win, it'll take a miracle. The other side is so strong. So similarly, that was the way it was in the battle of Kurukshetra. From the material point of view, the Kauravas, the evil side, they were so materially strong. And they were confident because they also had Krishna's armies. Actually, we have our Mahabharata expert here. How did it happen? The story of how Arjuna took Krishna and Duryodhana took Krishna's armies. But Krishna said, whoever I see when I wake up first, is that it? They can choose? So, what is it? Duryodhana said, I will go by the head, because certainly when Krishna wakes up and opens his eyes, the head is where he's going to look. You know, I got it all figured out. This is Duryodhana, the master of material, you know, calculation. You know, if you want to be where Krishna will see you first, you'd be by his head. You know, it's all natural, normal. That's the way it works. Okay? I'll sit by the head. Right? Okay. And Arjuna, what was his reason? What was his mentality? Krishna, he is our Lord and Master. Even though Arjuna and Krishna have the love of God relationship of friendship, still, Arjuna was being reverential. I will stand by the feet. So, Duryodhana was very happy. Everything was going according to material calculation. That's Duryodhana. Happiness for material strategy calculation. So, Krishna woke up. And, because Krishna is the independent, complete whole source of all energies, Krishna does whatever he likes, not according to anybody's schedule or calculation. He opened up, he woke up, opened his eyes, and then what happened? He looked down at his feet first, and saw Arjuna. Then what did he do? He asked Arjuna, so what do you want? So, obviously, you can imagine, Duryodhana was thinking, oh, no. Arjuna gets the first choice. It's like, I don't know about here in New Zealand, but in the States, the professional teams have what's called a draft. You don't have that here, right? All the big stars that are coming out of the universities, you know, they don't want that the top teams get all the big players just because they have more money. So you have a draft in which, according to your ranking in the standings, you get first pick, second pick. Therefore, the championship team gets the last pick, and the worst team gets the first pick. So anyway, it's a big thing in the States. You know, it's always on the front page of the papers, the draft, which team got which player. So, Duryodhana had that kind of mentality. Oh, it's the draft. I've got to get the first pick. And he blew it. Krishna didn't look at him. So he thought, oh, our hopes of winning the battle are finished. Arjuna's got the first choice. And now we know what he's going to do. What any materialist do? He would take Krishna's armies. That's what he'll choose, and I'll be finished. I mean, Krishna, he's just one person. A little bit powerful. He's just one person. And the armies are many. But, of course, what happened? Arjuna said, I will take Krishna. So was Duryodhana then very happy? Yes. It's all, I'm probably thinking Arjuna's a great fool. These sentimental Vaishnavas, they just don't understand practicality. That's what the modern person would say. So many parents of devotees, sometimes even persons who have been devotees, would think like, guys are impractical, be for real, go for the armies. This Krishna, he's just one person, a little bit more powerful. Why do you want this young bluish man who can have vast armies? So, Arjuna said, no, I want Krishna. So Duryodhana was, this is great. So, from the material point of view, the battle of Kurukshetra looked impossible for Arjuna and his brothers to win. Similarly, you'll read in this first couple of chapters of the 10th canto how things looked impossible at the time of Krishna's advent. King Kamsa and his father-in-law, Jarasandha, and so many demoniac kings had totally suppressed huge portions of land, and they were harassing and persecuting saintly persons, killing children, because they thought somewhere Krishna has taken birth. The best thing to do is kill all the children everywhere, and then somehow they will get Krishna by random chance. So things were looking very bleak. All the Yadu dynasty, Krishna's personal dynasty that he was appearing in, they had fled. A few of them, however, remained around Kamsa. Why is that? Who knows? A few of them Although they were members of the Yadu dynasty and devotees of Krishna, they didn't flee, they kept hanging out with Kamsa. What is this? Well, they knew that Krishna would take birth and kill Kamsa, and they wanted to have good seats to see the action. They wanted to be a center seat, just like at sports matches, if you get a front seat right down on the field, you think yourself very fortunate. So, materialists have that attitude about material things. Devotees have that attitude about spiritual things. Yes, we'll even go through the austerity of hanging out with Kamsa and pretending to be faithful to him just so we can be right there when Krishna kills him and we can really relish it. So they didn't run. They stayed around Kamsa and pretended that they would surrender to Kamsa. So, you see, this way devotees, they do so many things just to get Krishna, just to be there with Krishna. That is the real use of intelligence and determination. Whatever it takes, we're going to be right there when Krishna does this. In fact, that's why devotees, even though there are austerities and living in a devotional community, there are inconveniences, that's why devotees stay. Because they want to be right there where the devotional action is. With the same motivation that devotees like Akura stayed around Kamsa, because they wanted to see, have a first row seat when Krishna would kill Kamsa, when the action happened. Similarly, our devotees, they as much as possible try to live near the deities, or stay right in the center of things, so that they can always be when the service happens. That's a devotee's motivation. I'm going to be around where the service is. Yes, there'll be inconveniences. Yes, there'll be humiliations. Yes, there'll be austerities. But the main thing is the service will be happening. That I've got to be there. Of course, you can be physically located at New Varshana, for example, but not be in the center of things because of a lackadaisical service attitude. And you can be living 5 or 10 minutes down the road. Yes. You drive in and you perform puja for the deities. So, in this way, the main thing is to recognize where the service is, that's what I want to be involved with. So, at that time it looked very bleak. It looked materially impossible for any devotees of the Lord to thrive. Even Vasudeva's wives, except for Devaki, the other wives had dispersed throughout the land. Rohini, Mother Rohini was hiding in Vrindavan, Nandagokul. Yet, amidst these circumstances, Krishna appeared. Whenever things look materially impossible, that's the best time for Krishna to appear. Because in that way, Krishna demonstrates his superiority and supremacy. Of course, we have to understand these circumstances. How the battle of Kurukshetra looked impossible for the devotees. How the situation at the time of Krishna's appearance looked impossible. Then more and more we can appreciate the glories of Krishna, and that's why Arjuna is giving you this past history. How it looked impossible that the battle of Kurukshetra would ever turn out successfully. And then, after the Pandavas had won the battle, the only surviving descendant who was going to be able to rule in the future was Prichit. Yet, he was almost destroyed. He was in the womb of his mother, Uttara. And this rascal Ashvatthama tried to kill him in the womb by sending a Brahmastra, a localized nuclear weapon, which chases its target everywhere and just incinerates that one person who it sent after. So, Prichit Maharaj is remembering, I should have died in the womb of my mother, killed by this localized nuclear weapon, the Brahmastra. But Krishna entered the womb and saved me. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, you can read about that. Uttara fleeing, running to Krishna. Pahi pahi mahayogin, deva deva jagatpate. Krishna, you're the greatest yogi, Lord of the universe. Deliver me, save me, my embryo. My child in the womb is being attacked. Prabhupada explains that Uttara's fear and crying out to Krishna was not to save herself. She wanted to save her child because she knew her child was a great devotee of the Lord. So, Krishna Maharaj is remembering all these things. And finally he says, kindly enlighten me by describing his transcendental characteristics. In other words, Sukadeva Goswami, Guru Maharaj, I've got reasons, a lot of reasons I want to hear about Krishna. We owe everything to Krishna. But to speak of Krishna's transcendental characteristics and his natural sweetness, even from going over history, the history of our family, we owe everything to Krishna. Let's get on with it. Let's hear about Krishna. So, any questions? Just hearing a little about Krishna is so satisfying. It's amazing how we forget that point. You can watch this again and again in your devotional careers, whether they're budding or mature or whatever. How often we forget the satisfaction that comes from just hearing about Krishna. We think we need so many things to satisfy ourselves, to make things work, to make the world work for us. That's our desire. I've got to get the world to work for me. It's got to happen right for me. And we get so embroiled and entangled in all that, we forget. Just hearing about Krishna, I'm so satisfied. What's wrong with me? Why is that so? Yes, that is the mystical thing that materials can't understand about devotees. How you guys can come together early in the morning, sit on the floor, and hear about Krishna and be satisfied. They can't understand that. And it's not possible to understand, because it is not a material thing. As explained in the first canto, śrīmatāsvakatā Krishna punya śravana kirtana vidyantastha vibhadrāni vidunoti suhitsitāṁ. Krishna is in everyone's heart as your super soul. When you hear about Krishna, that activity gives pleasure to the Lord in the heart. And as a result, in reciprocation, Krishna cleanses your heart of material contamination because you're hearing about it. Therefore, you feel happy. The more you hear about Krishna, the more Krishna in your heart cleanses material contamination. The disease of bhava roga, repeated birth and death, is diminished. So, let us try not to forget this point. How? Just hear about Krishna, we become so satisfied. And we can't think of anything else in the world that would be as satisfying. That's quite an accomplishment. When you're actually hearing about Krishna successfully, without falling asleep, without being in complete anxiety, you can't concentrate on what you're hearing. When you actually successfully manage to hear about Krishna, there's nothing like this in the whole world. And you leave class thinking, well, this is all I need. Yeah, that's why I became a Hare Krishna. Yeah, to hear about Krishna. So we need to remind ourselves of these things. This is our treat. Sometimes people say, you know, even those who have taken to some degree of, who tried in some degree to practice Krishna consciousness in association of others, can be really austere there sometimes. Well, living with all those people, well, not all those people here, not so many. you know, one day somebody's telling you to mow the lawn, the next day they're telling you to, you know, wash the deity's plates, the next minute could be this, could be that, and everybody has to pitch in doing this and that, even householders who have their own families, still they have to pitch in a bit, you know, in the common share of getting things going, and, you know, it just gets to be a bit much. You know, I just, you know, want my own universe. I'll become Krishna conscious my own way, my own universe. Actually, of course, there'll be millions of people who will do that in the future, and that is very good. But for those who had a taste of intense devotional service, we don't want to forget that taste. Yes, there is austerity in serving Krishna, but there's austerity in serving Maya. Just take a 9-to-5 job and start understanding what austerity is like again. Did you tell me about that? People think there's only austerity in devotional service. We forget, you know, that there's austerity involved in any kind of service in the material world. But yeah, that's different. It's for me. I don't mind your scaries when they're for me, money for me, sense gratification for me, but devotional service to Krishna, well, that's all for Krishna. That's what unconsciously we're saying. Of course, consciously we may say, if you're right, it's for Krishna, but actually it's for the temple president. It's for the sannyasis. This way we kind of cheat ourselves out of devotional service. Anyway, we discussed those things before. We have to be skillful enough to see how the service is going to Krishna. And how do you keep that skill, that sensitivity? By hearing about Krishna. Then you'll see how the service is going to Krishna. So we have to take our reward. Our reward for pushing on Srila Prabhupada's mission is the fact we can relish hearing about Krishna. Those are his blessings. Also, the blessings are you get more opportunities to serve. When you get service and a chance to hear about Krishna, you've got Krishna's blessings. Otherwise, what do you expect? You know, mystic powers? You know, position on the heavenly planets? No, you get service and a chance to hear about Krishna. This is your reward. So if you don't take your dessert, you don't take your reward, naturally you're going to grow a little weak and angry. But we should only blame ourselves. So let us all inspire one another to always remember what the only delight in life is. Hearing about Krishna. So no one has any questions? Yes. Actually, you cannot continuously go about satisfying your senses. I was just reading that point in Nectar of Devotion, that it is impossible for the living entity to remain permanently absorbed in either sense gratification or renunciation. And we're talking ordinarily, about ordinary people. Therefore, there's what's called Upoga Tyaga. 1 minute you're absorbed in sense gratification, next minute, I better give it up, it's not worth it. Next minute, back to it again. Just like, those who smoke marijuana, they all have this universal tendency that, they smoke a lot of marijuana for several months, and then they notice that their tolerance has increased, that it takes more and more marijuana to get them intoxicated. So what they do is they go on a fast. The purpose of the fast is not to give it up, it's to clean out their system so they'll be more sensitive, so they can get more stoned when they do it again in the future. So that attitude is common in the living entity. A businessman, probably gives that example. I'm just giving little contemporary examples. A businessman works hard 5 days a week. Actually, professionals, they work 6-7 days a week. You work hard in your office, and you get so absorbed in working in your office, and then, now it's time for vacation. I'm going to Fiji. And you get to Fiji, and after a few days there, what is the businessman thinking? I wonder what's going on back in the office. I've got my mobile phone, I've got my electronic mail, I've got all those things, but I've got to be there. They probably need me. So you find that after 1 week at the most, they've got to get back to work. Because they are, the center of the universe. Everything is depending on them. They've got to do something. That's why Krishna says, you have to act according to the modes of nature. Also, another example, in Australia, I just quickly glanced at one magazine where, of course, there's no Aussies here either. Okay, in Australia things are kind of more brassy and more, plainly stated without any flowery cover. And it was an ordinary newspaper. They had one column where a lady was explaining the glories of celibacy. And her point was that after you've, made a slut of yourself for month after month, it's good to have a break in order to, once you start being a slut again, you can really, relish it even more as newer and newer. So it's good to take a break every once in a while. So this shows the point of bodhityaga, alternate sex gratification and renunciation. So Prabhupada makes that point. The material living entity cannot stay in either position. You can go from one to another. They absorb themselves in sense back, and then, oh, we should give it up for a while. And then they get back right into it again. So, you're saying it's possible to be continuous about sense gratification. It isn't. And if you look closely, you'll see that. But how do you get the determination to go on serving Krishna? You hear about Krishna, and naturally you'll want to serve Krishna. And you follow the examples of those who are determined to serve Krishna. That's how you got entangled in material life, by following the examples of those dedicated to material life. Similarly, if you want to increase your determination to serve Krishna, follow the example of those who are determined. For example, I tell any devotee who says, sometimes it's really austere serving Krishna in the association of devotees. I say, well, when you've gone through enough tribulation, when you've gone through more, or even equal tribulation, as Prabhupada went through to bring Krishna consciousness to the West, then you can give up. Then you can give up. So we can read the Lilamrita and see Prabhupada's determination and try to match a little bit. Try our best to do our little bit to follow in his footsteps. Yes.
Describing how the devotee has to develop a sense of militancy in terms of to overcome a bad track record. So ultimately, is it possible, even if you're in a spiritual environment, that there may be a kind of a coasting attitude where the disease will go away and I mean, just keep around?
It's good that devotees want to stay around the hospital. We don't want to criticize that, but obviously we want to stress the thing is to take the medicine. And we need to constantly be pointing out to one another how we avoid taking the medicine. Mothers here, they have experience of trying to give children medicine. It can be quite an ordeal. You have to devise various ways of insisting that the child takes the medicine, and the children want to avoid it. Similarly, we have to be expert in seeing how we try to avoid our medicine for curing the disease of repeated birth and death. All the excuses we make, all the elaborate schemes you go through just to avoid taking our medicine.